Welcome to the Space Show, Bernard.
Glad to be here.
How does a doctor become an astronaut?
Well, that's a good question. I'm from the U.S., from Texas, and very early, about the age of seven or so, we moved out to the Navajo Indian Reservation, which happens to be in the western part of our nation. And it was amongst those painted deserts and wonderful skies of that reservation that I got the notion to become an astronaut. And I remember as I was about 9 years old at the time, and it was also during the time in which we had the space program, the race between the United States and the Russians to see who were going to make it to space and then eventually to the moon. So I got to watch that as a kid. And just like every kid in the world, I wanted to be an astronaut.
And did you at that stage have any idea that you might really become one?
Well, I remember making a conscious decision to be an astronaut and talking to my mom and saying, "Mother, I want to be an astronaut." And I don't think that she thought that I would be an astronaut, but she did as all mothers said. She told me that I could be anything that I wanted to be. And that was really something that I needed to hear. And I took it literally, and I decided that that's what I would do. And so as I learned more and more about NASA, I found out that there were doctors who worked in the space program. And of course, you can't go to a university and just major in being an astronaut. You have to major in something. I decided to do medicine. And that's how I ended up, you know, combining my aspirations to be an astronaut with that of being a physician.
I was just going to ask you, what area of medicine were you working in?
I'd like to answer that question two ways. My terrestrial specialty is internal medicine, and I also have a subspecialty in endocrinology. So I specialize in osteoporosis, high blood pressure, heart disease, that type of thing. And my extraterrestrial specialty is space medicine. So I'm heavily involved in how we can use microgravity as an on-orbit laboratory to look at processes of the human body.
And at what time did you apply to be an astronaut then?
I finished my medical education when I was about 29, and I joined NASA as a research scientist. And I worked as a research scientist for about 3 years, and then was accepted into the astronaut corps in 1990. And been an astronaut ever since. I've flown two missions so far. My first mission was with the German Space Agency, and where we spent 2 weeks in space.
That was Space Lab 2, wasn't it?
And that was actually Space Lab. It was called D2. It was the second German Space Lab mission. And there we had about 45% of the mission was geared toward medicine, space medicine. And the other was various experiments. We had probably five furnaces on board where we did material processing. We did some astronomy type research. And then my second flight was the first mission to the Mir space station. So we were the first shuttle to go to the Mir station. So we took some of the first pictures from there, and it was an exciting flight.
I can say that would be a very exciting event, coming up alongside and flying around the space station. Was that the first docking mission or the actual rendezvous one before?
That was the rendezvous mission, and the docking mission followed our flight.
And at what time did you leave NASA then?
I left NASA about 2 years ago to join Spacehab as their vice president of microgravity and life sciences, basically the science side, promoting all these things that we've just been talking about, utilization of this on-orbit microgravity laboratory.
Was it a hard decision to decide to give up the life of an astronaut and sort of come back to Earth, stay back on Earth?
Well, I think of it as not giving up the life of an astronaut, because once you're an astronaut, you're always an astronaut. And just as John Glenn is proving on the next flight, you can fly much later. You may have some gaps in the time in which you fly, so that's why the way I'd like to look at it. But more importantly, I think that there will be opportunities for private flight that I think in the 21st century, the early part of the 21st century, there will be such a push, private initiative in space, that you won't no longer have to be involved with the government or a government-sponsored training program to get into orbit. So I think that there opportunities will open up tremendously as that comes along.
Do you think non-astronauts, that's non-career astronauts or ex-career astronauts, will get the chance to fly on the space station once it's established and working?
The space station I'm not sure of, because, again, that is an international national government effort. Although NASA has now said that they're going to try to commercialize or privatize portions of that, so to get more private involvement. So that may open up the door. But I think we're talking about the generation after the International Station, where you'll see private orbiting platforms that will be built by companies like Spacehab to do specific research. In that case, then you will need your own cadre of flyers to take care of a facility like that.
And you need your own fleet of private vehicles to get up there and back again.
And you'll need your own fleet of private vehicles. As you're probably aware of, there is an effort going on here in Australia, which is a private effort, the Kistler Group. There are a number of other companies around the world that are building launch vehicles. And that'll change the whole topography of space, because no longer will you have to be dependent on government for human space flight. There will be a number of launch vehicles, and I think you'll see the boom just like we saw in the telecommunication industry. I mean, think about it. Telecommunications started as a government effort, and now we have launch vehicles all over the world. China, France, South America, even here.
Ray Seddon, you'll be familiar with her, of course.
I beg your pardon?
Ray Seddon.
Ray, yes. Yes.
She told me that there hadn't, at that time, this is several years ago now, been much interaction between the Russian program and the American program, and that her understanding of it was that the Russians hadn't gone very much into biomedicine in the way that the Americans have. Is that your viewpoint, or do you have a different view?
Well, the Russians certainly, they have an institute of biomedical problems that they have been... that has been highly active over the last 30 years or longer now. And their emphasis is really ensuring human survival and their cosmonauts up there. And I know that they have done some work in the biomedical region. Now, certainly we on the Western side have really been focusing on that, mainly because we're being trying to prove the benefits or take advantage of microgravity as an on-orbit laboratory and show those benefits back. So we have concentrated on that. So it's just an emphasis in the program.
Well, thank you, Bernard, for joining us tonight on The Space Show.
It's been my pleasure.